Save It for the Blind is sponsored by Kershaw Knives. Kershaw manufactures next-level pocket knives for outdoor enthusiasts. Save It for the Blind is now also being sponsored by Roseville Motorsports. Roseville Motorsports is the greater Sacramento area's premier destination for all your power sports vehicle needs. Stop in today to browse off-road vehicles from leading manufacturers like Polaris, Yamaha, and more. If you guys are enjoying the show, we'd love to hear from you and get your support. Please follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Give us a 5-star rating. Your reviews really help us grow and reach more people. Thank you for being a part of our community.
Well, other than that, you look familiar. Now that we've established that we have, did we hunt together that day, or was
I was the coordinator that day, so I just got everybody out and then waited for everybody to come back.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Was it with Ben Broadley?
I don't remember that name. I think it was your dad and your brother.
Okay.
Ben's hunted a bunch with us, though. Him and his dad.
Yeah.
Over the years.
That name must sound familiar for you. It doesn't for me.
Yeah, remember his dad shot the pig with the bow? He was one of our first or second bow kills.
At Schaefer Ranch?
Yeah. Dad with glasses.
I'd have to look back.
He's probably.
Yeah, you'd if you saw him, you'd notice him.
Huh.
Yeah. Interesting. Good people. I went to high school. Me and Ben graduated high school together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What's he Small doing world. Now? What's he doing these days?
I know he's in college. I haven't talked to him in years. It's crazy after high school what happens with your friends. Some of them you get really close with, some of them dissipate. And then obviously like kind of just real life happens.
It does.
Well, we graduated in 2020, so that was probably the weirdest year to graduate high school in history.
That's tough.
Yeah, it was just like one week in April. And they're like, oh, you guys get 2 weeks off. There's a virus going around. And then we just never went back to school. So that was my introduction into real life. And then, I think, talking with some people from my high school, it was like we never got closure or whatever you want to call it. Hindsight, it's high school, right? But during that time, it's such a big part of your life. It's like all you know, is those 4 years. So
do you feel like cheated out of your graduation?
Yeah, I think that was the consensus about it, from everyone. We got cheated out of it. So, and I mean, everything happens for a reason for sure. That experience led me to making a few phone calls, which eventually made me move out to Colorado and pursue what I'm doing now. So kind of long story short, gentleman named Jake Latondras, he does a lot of outdoor media production and has been doing it for probably 2 decades now. He and I met online on Instagram when I was 14, 15, like early on in my photography adventure. And he had just became my mentor. And anytime I had a question, I went to him, and it was more, it went from camera questions to like real life questions. So it was, he was like a father figure in the outdoor space for me. So anyways, 2020 happens, school gets shut down. I give Jake a call and I'm like, hey man, like I really want to pursue this outdoor photography and videography deal, what should I do? And he pitched the idea and said, hey, if you want to, I've got a hunting outfitter out here in Western Nebraska and I'm living in Colorado. If you want to move out to Colorado and work for me, we can get the ball rolling that way. And then I had to convince my mom, which was difficult.
Were you planning on going to college?
No, it was never really in the playbook. Gotcha. We had lightly talked about it, but I mean, my mentality was I know what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to do something with this media business. And if I were to go to college, I'd spend a bunch of money and come out of it maybe, maybe better off, maybe not. I don't know. But yeah, once COVID happened, it really flushed that down the toilet because we went online schooling and I don't think I touched my computer one time for those. They were still doing assignments. So like, oh yeah. And then at one point they were like, it was like in May or whatever, we're a month from graduation. They're like, well, the lowest your grade can go, even if you don't do any assignments, is a C. So I had like B's and A's, and I was like, okay, C's is good enough for me. So I just never did an assignment. Like literally April happened. I never, that was my last day of school.
And doing wild.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And then, so then I did convince my mom, and I moved to Colorado. I started working for that hunting outfitter called Prairie Rock Outfitters in Western Nebraska for 2 years. And, ever since then, I'm still in touch with Jake quite a bit. Actually, I just moved houses, and I could throw a rock to his house right now. So kind of a cool full circle moment. I'm working a lot with a gentleman named Colin Mulligan for Ducks Unlimited, and we do all sorts of stuff with them. DU Conserve, DU Nation, DU TV, all things DU. So it's cool to get involved with another conservation organization on a national scale. And we travel all over the country. Actually, we just went to California in December and filmed a Ducks Unlimited TV show there too. So a lot of fun. Touched on CWA quite a bit. Obviously that's my roots, man. That's
we'll get to that. We'll do a little formal introduction. So welcome back to another episode of Save for the Blind. Got Carson Odegaard here with my co-host Jeff Smith, and on the other side of the microphone we got Brandon Fien, waterfowl photographer and now videographer of all things. So welcome officially to the podcast. We appreciate you coming on today and diving into obviously your background, because you started in California, local boy, CWA, and now you're nationwide. So what?
Yeah, man.
What was that start? Because if I remember correctly, I don't know if we had a magazine article about you or if I heard it just from your dad, but I vaguely remember it was like you as a kid running around with your bike, going down to a local pond, taking pictures of ducks, is like how it all started. Am I on the right track there?
Yeah, no, that's right. I grew up in a town called Vacaville, California, and about 3 or 4 miles from my house is a lake, big lake called Pina Adobe, if you're familiar. And every day before I got my driver's license, I would ride my bike out to that lake, take pictures of ducks. There's creeks all over the place, take pictures of wood ducks. And I was obsessed with it, and it was a weird obsession to have, especially in your typical high school where people are either playing sports or whatnot. There's the typical stereotypes, and I didn't fall in any of those. So I was named the Duck Kid. And
were you hunting a lot at the time, and this was like an off-season thing, or were you taking pictures of ducks at this time during hunting season? Because that's, for me, like, how do you balance that, especially when you're a kid?
Yeah, I mean, it was a weird time. Like, I had been playing baseball my whole life. I was 13. And I was a pitcher, and I got an arm injury, and that happened in October of 2012 or 2013 or whenever it was. So then I never played baseball again. And during that time, it just so happened to be in October, and we were moving houses. And I found a camera in my mom's, one of her closet baskets or whatever. And I was like, oh, that looks interesting. Kind of backstory, when I was doing, when I had my arm injury, I was drawing pictures of ducks, like with graphite pencils and stuff. So I'd always look up images online and then draw that picture. And then I was like, okay, well, I'm going to be the one to take the picture and then I'll draw it. Then I started taking the pictures. I'm like, wow, this is way more fun than sitting at a desk. And yeah, I was just running around all over town taking pictures of ducks. And yes, I was hunting a lot. And I just found more satisfaction in capturing the moment than pulling the trigger, because I mean, you take a picture and it lasts forever. So while there was definitely times where you have to kind of make a split decision, it was I normally pick the camera, and it was kind of fun to watch that unfold.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive, especially for somebody that's younger, because a lot of the kids that are, you know, 13 to 15, that's all they want to do is pull the trigger. And for you to have that thought of like, nah, I'd rather take the picture and see somebody else pull the trigger, kind of, if that doesn't describe your path, like nothing else does at that age, wanting to take a picture of, like you said, the moment rather than pulling that trigger. That's impressive.
Right. I appreciate that. I mean, it wasn't I wasn't doing anything I didn't want to do, for sure. I wasn't forced or anything. So it was all it was freedom is what it was with my passion, and obviously my parents, just a huge support system. I mean, how do you go from your typical, my kid's going to play sports and then, you know, play sports in high school and have a group of friends to, oh, he takes pictures of ducks. Explain that to your friends, mom.
Was there a moment like when you were younger where all of a sudden your parents or you thought, well, this is kind of catching on? Was there like a magazine cover that you got or something where it's like, wow, this is starting to gain some traction?
Yeah. I don't remember exactly the moment, but I do remember there was definitely a switch with my parents when they realized it wasn't a hobby anymore. It was more directed towards a passion. I mean, you know, it's like one of those things. Oh, he's taking pictures for a while. I'll probably give it up.
Yeah, it's a phase. He's in a phase.
Yeah, like, and I thought so too. I never really thought too far into it. And I mean, then you like look up and you're like, holy cow, I've been doing this for 10 years now. And that's where I'm at today. But yeah, there was definitely a switch. And I believe the first magazine I got was actually for Vacaville magazine, my hometown. And, to this day, it's the only picture of a duck as their cover. And, the rest of them are like portraits, whatever. All shot by a gentleman named Ryan Bates. And, I think I'm the only one with the duck on it still. So that was my first one. And, I just posted them all to Instagram, during a time where, you know, the algorithm was people would see it, new people would see it. And then, I would meet people, I would talk to people online. And I mean, hindsight now, it's probably weird thinking a 13-year-old is talking to a bunch of old men online, yeah. You know, ducks and cameras. But yeah, then, I mean, that's, I think that was, I don't know if there was really one defining moment. I think there was a wide variety of things that happened pretty closely together that really flipped a switch. And I haven't really looked back.
Yeah, even when you were younger, you had multiple CWA covers. I remember seeing those when they came up.
Yeah, I have there's one of my dog back there, Crash, with a mallard. There's a speck somewhere. I'm blessed, for sure, blessed. I can't thank everybody enough for the support. I don't feel like I deserve it. I was just doing it because I liked it, right? And it's been a cool experience. I mean, it's taught me everything I know up to this point, and I've met some incredible people along the way. I've met some of my best friends. I mean, mentors, and people I consider family now. And you know, even though it's kind of brought me a few states away from California, I still miss that place every day. I talk to my parents, and it's just been an enlightening experience.
Yeah. We're talking about kind of magazine covers. What makes a good waterfowl picture? Because I see ducks, and if I take a picture, like, there's just a different look to pictures that are done your style or other styles that are that caliber. What's the difference? Like, what makes that good picture?
I think good is subjective. I think it's like asking somebody, like, what makes a good song, right? I mean, I don't want to call myself an artist, but in a way, photography and videography is an art. So to make something good, I don't know how to answer that, just because I just do it the way that my eyes see it. And the way I see something.
What are you looking for in a picture?
I mean, obviously, there's a quote I've heard that's, you can fix everything except for out of focus, which means it's got to be sharp. And then from there, you editing is key, for sure. You have to bend light. I mean, same thing with painting is controlling color. Photography is controlling light. Same thing. Music is controlling sound. So with photography, you're bending your light. Everything is about light. And there's so many different ways you can do it. You can shoot backlit, side lit, front lit, top lit. It is all subjective. And a good picture is no different than somebody else's version of a good picture. I think that what I'm looking for is something that I see I don't know really how to answer the question, just because it's so, everything is so different. Every day is so different, and every photo is so different. And every moment is so different. That's really the love of photography, has come from capturing moments that can never be captured again. And I mean, to make something good, you just have to strive to be the best. And that's what I've always strived to be, better than I was yesterday, has been my motto. So better with controlling the light, better with editing, better with capturing moments, better with capturing the right moments. And whatever that right moment is for me may not be the right moment for somebody else, but I mean, it's all subjective.
Yeah. Do you have a picture that you're most proud of that you kind of look back and is like, that's the one?
I've been asked this question before, and I don't know.
You don't have that just like one framed picture where it's like, that was the shot.
The CWA covers.
Yeah, CWA coverage. Yeah, the picture of that photo of I actually have it hanging up behind me, is that photo of Crash, my black lab. He's a special dog. If I had to pick one of my favorite, yeah, if I could pick a favorite cover, it'd be that one by far. I mean, the lighting's just great. I mean, it's a black dog against a beautiful contrast in the Butte Sink, holding a greenhead in his mouth. I mean, it just doesn't get any better than that. I mean, that's your standard black lab mallard duck, California.
Yeah.
If you could wrap it all up in one, that'd be it.
Yeah.
Now, when you're working for like the outfitter, are you doing just marketing material for them, or are you just going with the hunters during their trip and just giving them videos or stills afterwards? I mean, what's your role there?
So I don't work with outfitters that much. I do, and it's not because I don't want to. It's just I just haven't really had the experience to really get involved with them, except for 2 years ago I worked with a outfitter in Western Nebraska, and I got hired to be the marketing manager, and I ended up becoming a guide. So it was just kind of my fault. And it was funny because I'll never forget this. My first 2 weeks on the job, I moved there August, like middle of August. And then September 1st was opening mule deer season, archery mule deer season. And I've never been deer hunting, zero times. And my boss comes up to me. He's like, "Hey, Brandon, get ready. You're guiding an archery mule deer hunt on the 1st. I'm like, "What?" And I was like, "I'm holding a camera like that. Am I, you want me to film it?" He's like, "No, you're guiding." And I was like, "Oh." And it's just funny stuff. I ended up finding a buck that was pretty decent, and or at least I thought it was. And I scouted him out for 2 weeks, and literally every single day I was like, I will not fail. And figured out this deer's or this buck's feeding pattern, his bedding pattern, and his watering hole. And I figured out exact at what point in the day, for 14 days, he did the same exact thing. So I knew at one point in any day, I knew where he was. And day one shows up. I left the camera back at the house because I was being a guide. And then we shot that deer on day one at 45 yards. Then the next day we shot limits of doves. And then the next day after that, he booked a pronghorn hunt, and we spot and stalked an archery pronghorn. And that was my first experience of working in the outdoor industry. And I just was never a camera guy after that. I was always a guide.
Oh, that's interesting.
Even though I took pictures, that wasn't what I was being paid for.
But that's why you moved out there originally, though, was for that job.
Yeah. So I, in high school, obviously I graduated in 2020, and everything went south. Met that guy, Jake Latondres, my mentor. Met him when I was 15, and he was a part of this outfitter in Western Nebraska. And yeah, he offered me a job to be the marketing manager out there. And then I was like the marketing manager / guide, and mostly guide.
And you had no deer hunting experience or big game experience for that?
Zero. I mean, the client that I have on the day they showed up, his name is Charles. I'll never forget this. And my boss at the time, he was like, "Hey, Charles, just so you know, Brandon's never killed a deer before." And then he looked at me. He's like, "You've been deer hunting before, right?" And I was like, "Do you want me to be honest?" He's like, "No." So the whole time he's thinking, like, "I just got garholed with this kid, this 18-year-old kid, never been deer hunting." And so it was funny. He was a trooper about it. But when he asked me, he was like, "Do you have a deer in mind?" And I was like, "Yeah, I've got a deer for you." And he's like, "Is it a good one?" I'm like, "I think it's pretty good." And he's like, you know, standoffish, as he should be. And I mean, he just spent like $7,500 on this hunt and got put with an 18-year-old kid. Imagine that. So we go out in the morning, and I walk him out like 4.5 miles, and he's like, "Do you know where you're going?" I'm like, "Yep, I know where I'm going." We sit down on this draw. Basically, it's a big bowl, and we're on one end of the valley, and there's a hill on the other side. And I said, at 7 o'clock in the morning, he's going to be standing here with like 15 other does. We might get busted by the does, we might not. And he's like, "Yeah, like, you know, okay." And then at 7 o'clock in the morning, he was there with 15 other does, and he was at 45 yards, and he shot him in the liver. We went and found it the next day, and it scored 175 inches.
Oh, nice.
So it was a pretty good one.
That's awesome.
And then I quickly learned after that not every guiding experience was like that.
From whatever I knew when you were younger, it was always still photography. And then I saw some stuff recently that we're going to talk about, but you've definitely obviously switched over to a lot of video now.
Yeah. 100%. And, now I never saw my career going this way, but I mean, you get roll with the punches. My mentor, Jake Latondras, he told me back in 2019 or 2020, he said, "The industry is going to be video soon." And, he was right. And you either jump on the train or you fight the bull. And, so I made a conscious effort to pursue the video thing. And now it's 99% of my work is all video.
Oh, wow.
All video projects, whether it's reels, short videos, feature films, documentaries, you name it. That's interviews. It's so I've now found a love for producing, which has been a cool journey to do. I made the switch from, to answer your question, I made the switch from stills to video in 2021. Would have been the year. And it's not like I just quit doing stills. I still take pictures every day. But for work and things that end up becoming work, it's video.
That's interesting. I saw you posted on your Instagram, I think now it's 4 days ago, a pretty sweet clip of a bunch of hunts that went together. And the one that caught my eye, there was an emperor goose hunt that there was video of. So did you film that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
no, how was that? Because I've seen it. I've heard about it. What's that experience like?
It is, it'll leave you speechless. It's, and I was just coming off a high of a year ago. I shot a king eider, and, I thought like that was
the peak,
right? Like and then you put an emperor. I did not get to shoot the emperor. We were filming a deal in Cold Bay, Alaska for Brandt and Harlequin and Sea Ducks, whatever. Awesome stuff. Just phenomenal. I mean, unforgettable experience. And my business partner, Colin Mulligan, ended up shooting a Eurasian widgeon too. So just put an icing on the cake. And then, there was a guy in camp named Mike Wielander, and he had an emperor tag. And, nice. And he was going to go hunt it. And I was like, "Hey, I think this is an amazing conservation story." And, I mean, the species was closed for 30 some odd years. And then it opened back up in 2017. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service only allows, a quota of 1,000 a year to be shot and 25 non-resident tags. And then there was kind of a whispers that the season was going to get closed the following year, you know, for who knows how long. And I was like, "We probably won't ever get to see this. There's a chance we'll probably never see this again in our lives." And I was like, can we go film it? Colin and I asked if we can go film it. And, we did. And it was, I mean, it's the bird itself is just incredible. I mean, it lives, It eats clams and all sorts of stuff on the beach. It looks like a blue goose in flight and sounds exactly like a speck.
Oh, wow.
I mean, just, I mean, just crazy stuff. And then they decoy. Like, you call at them and they decoy. And that's how we shot it, was in the air. I mean, backpedaling. I mean, just right in the hole. And it was trying to land on a gravel bar on the beach. Cool. And once you had the bird in hand, I think everyone had the same feeling of just not only like a weight lifted off your shoulders, but more so just gratitude for the moment. I think everyone was just so involved in the moment. The whole trip, cameras were rolling the entire time, but it was hard to film that moment. I did film it, but it was hard to film. It was just keep a camera on the whole time because you wanted to be present. Like, you wanted to be in that moment, not looking through a lens. So luckily the other camera guy and I, his name's Guy Shepherd. We took a moment. We were just like looking at what was happening. I'm like, holy cow. And yeah, coming off a high of a king eider to an emperor goose. I mean, it's just, they're just both in a different category.
Yeah. 100%. Do you have something that's on your bucket list that you want to film that you haven't had the chance to film yet, or like a place like,
to film? I mean, yes, we're going to go do it in Oregon. We're going to go hunt the Aleutians, but that's in 2 weeks. We're leaving to go do that. Other than that, I mean, black ducks up in, I think they're in, I forget where they are, where you can really target them. I want to say Michigan or somewhere, Maryland. Black ducks for sure. Canvasbacks, but I can, you know, go do canvasbacks in California.
go off a 37.
And I always say this because I do get the question quite a bit, is like, where's been the favorite place you've ever filmed or hunted in? And I always say this, my favorite place is the Butte Sing of California. And if I were to have my last hunt on earth, it would be there. Yeah. It's so unique. I've hunted all over the country now, and there's no place like California, especially the Butte Sink. I mean, you've got flooded willows, flooded watergrass, tule patches. You've got the smallest mountain range of the world right at your feet. And you're shooting ducks in close quarters. You're shooting all sorts of ducks. When the bypass floods, you can shoot divers and canvasbacks and redheads. And when it's not on a big north wind, you can shoot mallards and wood ducks and pintail and widgeon and whatever. There's no place as diverse, and there's no place in my mind that's as beautiful as the Butte Sink.
Yeah.
So
hard to beat.
We run into it a lot where we'll have folks come out here that work for us from other states. I had no clue California had so many ducks. Like, nobody really does. And you talk to other people in other states, I'm sure you get that a lot. Like, there's ducks out there. Like, are you sure?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. It's a stigma.
Yeah. 100%.
And I'm like, yeah, no, there's no ducks in California. You're right.
Yeah.
No, it's a special place. I'm blessed that that's where I call home, and that's where my dad, you know, took me out when I was 4 years old in a little, you know, sled, and I was riding around at the refuges, from Sac Refuge to Delavan to all sorts of places. It's just a special place. And yes, there's a lot of ducks.
Yeah.
And especially the mallard hunting out there. I mean, the Pacific flyway is unique for the bird limit, the 7 bird limit. That's nowhere else in the country. Can you go shoot 7 mallards? It's always 5. You get a bonus duck. And, I mean, it's crazy. When I moved out to Colorado, now we're shooting mallards in cornfields, and they're trying to pick out a widgeon or something in a big flock of mallards. I'm from California. I've seen plenty of widgeon. I want to see some mallards too. Yeah. So it's interesting. All sorts, all over the country, you see different sorts of cultures and styles and people and the way they hunt. And I mean, it's so diverse. So that's been my big takeaway from living out of state. While I do always want to go back, it's been a blessing getting to travel and meet all sorts of folks.
I heard you had a grizzly bear encounter on camera.
That was
how'd that work out?
That was literally, I can't believe I didn't say this earlier. As we were going out to go on that emperor goose hunt is when we encountered that grizzly bear.
Same day?
same hour.
Oh.
I don't know how I didn't. I forgot about that part. But yeah, we were. I'm right on the front of the boat, and it's probably a 15-mile boat ride out to where we're gonna go hunt the emperors.
So are you going on a river or a bays on the ocean?
It's a bay. Okay. It's basically, so it's called Eisenbeck Lagoon in Cold Bay, Alaska, and it filters into the Bering Sea. So we're sitting, we're kind of just driving down this inlet on the lagoon, and there's a big old grizz on the bank, and we're like, man, well, let's go get pictures of him. And I'm sitting on the front with my camera, just taking pictures, and we're probably 30 yards away from him, like close enough, but we felt safe enough in the boat where we thought. The water we were in was super shallow, like we were dragging the bottom the whole time. And all of a sudden, that bear just decided he wanted to cross, and he turned to us. He showed us his shoulders, and the captain gets on the motor, and we're not going anywhere.
Oh,
when
geez.
We got on the motor, it got loud, and he got pissed, and he pins his earbags and full.
Oh.
I mean, cleared 30 yards to 20 to 10 in four strides, five strides, and this whole time this is happening, I'm sitting on the front just shooting photos of it. And I've got a big lens on, and the bear actually got so close. Like, that picture that I posted online is – that's as wide as the camera angle. I couldn't zoom my camera out anymore. Like, he was so big. He covered up the entire frame. His shoulders are out of it. And, yeah, I got charged by a grizzly bear. And if it was going to be my last moment on Earth, at least it was documented.
Oh, jeez.
Then you guys went from that to go shooting the emperor goose in, like,
yeah,
a few hours?
Yeah, right after.
Yeah, you can't top that day. That's forever. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. That's yep. It was special. It was special. I can't believe I forgot about that part. I didn't forget
it from
about
your memory.
It. Yeah, no, it was – so it's always funny to see people's reactions – under the most exhilarating, like the adrenaline rush you have from that is incredible. The only thing I can compare it to is one time I rode a bull, just stupid. My mom wasn't a fan of that. And that was the biggest adrenaline rush of my life by far until that moment of the bear. I mean, he's grunting, he's snorting, he's pushing water, charging us. And some guy, like one guy's in the boat, just big-eyed, bug-eyed. We've got the captain that's like, oh, damn, that was pretty close. And then we've got Colin, and he's sitting there like, and then there's me. I'm just hooting and hollering. There was another boat away from us, and I literally, like, shot my hands in the sky. I was like, yes! because it was funny, all week I had been saying, I was like, I want to get close to a grizzly. I want to get close to a grizzly. Close, like 100 yards. I want to get within 100 yards.
You got your wish.
Because we were seeing bears all week. And then somebody, his name is Mike, said something to me. He was like, yeah, was that one close enough for you? I was like, yeah, I'm okay with 10. I'm okay with 10 yards.
Did it shortstop you, or did you guys get the boat kind of unstuck and got going?
Yeah, we got it unstuck. He really revved it that time. Like, we were kind of trying to get out of it, but that time he was like, all right. And just got on plane, and we left. But, yeah, we turned around. That bear, he charged us. Then he turned back around, and as he's getting out of the water, he turns around, looks over his shoulder, and goes, whew, and splashes the water and walks away. And that was it.
Oh, wow. That's wild.
Yeah. You don't see that stuff in California.
You don't. You don't.
We've had some kids come out work for us. They're like, you guys don't have anything like poisonous, no cottonmouths, yeah. No snapping turtles. I'm like, no, dude, we're California. Like, you got a black widow, and maybe if you're hunting down south, like maybe some rattlesnakes if it's too hot, but nothing's really gonna get you out here.
No alligators, no nothing.
Yeah, them Florida boys, that everything in Florida is just trying to kill you. It's like the Australia of America.
It's a good way to put it.
You've got spiders as big as your face. You've got gators. You've got cottonmouths. You've got every poisonous frog, iguanas, whatever. I've spent some time in Florida. I know all too well what that kind of cesspool is.
Yeah. Did you jump into any big game filming yet, or are you just going to do strictly waterfowl stuff?
I'm always open to whatever. Oh, I mean, I, you know, now I'm filming all, I mean, big game is it's just something I haven't really had the opportunity to do yet. Besides when I was guiding out in Nebraska, I haven't filmed any big game hunts solely just for the purpose of filming. Otherwise it was like, I was getting footage while I was guiding. But I mean, just to put it in perspective, we were filming Blue Marlin out in North Carolina. We were filming spearfishing in the Gulf of Mexico. We were filming iguana hunting in Florida. We were filming trap shooting. I would say actually most of my work now is fishing related, not waterfowl related. I do a TV show called Bassmaster as a live camera guy. And that takes up a good chunk of my spring and summer.
Like the Bassmaster? Like Bassmaster Classic, yeah. Bassmaster?
Like following one fisherman around in his boat?
Yep, yep. Yes, sir.
You ever get stuck with a good fisherman that actually wins?
Yes, I've filmed, I've covered three wins now.
Oh, nice.
One with Brian Schmidt, one with Trey McKinney, and I filmed an open win. I want to say, I forget his name. I filmed Cliff Prince win this year. It's always cool to be on the winning boat. Obviously, like when you're a live camera guy, there's 10 of us, and you're always on the top 10 boats of that day. So the way it works is day one and two, there's 100 boats. And day one, you get put with historically, like you get put with like a local or like the leader of AOY, Angler of the Year. And day one's always kind of like a mix of anglers that have just historically done well there. Then day two, three, and four, you're always with whoever's in the top 10 on the leaderboard. And then by day four, there's only 10 anglers on the whole tournament. And so there's 10 cameras with 10 fishermen, and one of them is someone's covering the winner. There's always a 10% chance every time you go to an event, mm-hmm. you're going to cover the winner. So it's a lot of fun. You go to same thing. You travel all over the country, see a bunch of cool things, food, places, people, and you get to spend a lot of time on the boat with some of the best bass fishermen in the world. And you'd think by now I'd learn a lot, but I'm absolutely horrible at fishing, particularly bass fishing. I suck at bass fishing. I'm like, oh yeah, I can pick up on that, and nope. No.
Yeah, this next level kind of thing.
That is why I am on the back of the boat.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Are most of these gigs for TV shows or videos, or is it like, are you doing more like YouTube channels and that type of stuff? It seems like
it's both ways. So it's kind of all over the place. That's the beauty of freelancing, is you're never tied down to one thing. With Bassmaster, we're contracted out as we're filming for Fox Sports, so that's live television, which requires no editing on my part, but we do have there's a studio back in Little Rock that handles all of that, and it's live. With Ducks Unlimited Television, we're filming for Sportsman's Channel, for DU Nation and DU Conserve, which is what I have my hand in quite a bit, is for YouTube. And they use them at like banquets and all sorts of stuff. I mean, it's all, it just really is you do what the client wants, and wherever they decide to put it is where they put it. I would say it's all over the place. I did something for Bass Pro Shops once. I think that was YouTube and commercial. It's just there's a wide variety of places that stuff goes.
So you have your own production company now that you run with a partner, correct?
Yes, sir. I do. We just finalized it. It's called Stonehouse Studios. Me and my business partner, Colin Mulligan, phenomenal young entrepreneur. I mean, I can't say enough good things about him. That dude is just a hammer. He's 24 years old, and I don't think he does anything besides work. I mean, every time I call him, he's always like got something new he's formulating. And I mean, right now he's working in he took a position as a director of business relations for a startup in Lexington, Kentucky for whiskey. And that's taken up a lot of his time. And he's also involved in the production company quite a bit. And he's become a phenomenal producer. We've got a lot of cool stuff coming out this year, like that Emperor Hunt and the Brandt and all that stuff. And we're going to go do the Oregon deal. We did a big hunt here in Colorado a couple of weeks ago. And so he formulates all the big ideas, and I'm on the back end with the filming and editing. So great, great guy to have on my team. And really we just work so well together. It's been awesome to work with him. But yeah, Stonehouse Studios, we're kind of making our debut this year as an official, production company, and we're going to try to see where it goes, and hopefully we can scale it.
That's cool. So, like, if somebody, you know, draws a once-in-a-lifetime sheep tag and they want to get it filmed, they could actually reach out to you and be like, hey, what's your cost? Come film my hunt.
Yes, 100%. And absolutely. That's definitely in the wheelhouse. We're looking to scale to the point where any job we can either – we'll either go on it, or we're going to have a team that would help execute, and we'll have a team of editors, videographers, photographers. And we're all going to kind of formulate the same style, same, you know, everything's going to look cohesive. So it's not like you're going to get some random guy that I just found on the internet. Like, we're going to have a real team, and we've got some people in mind that we've been talking to quite a bit that kind of reflect our style. And, anything you want, really. We do anything from marketing to social media managing to, you know, full-fledged documentary feature films.
Wow.
And everything in between, photography, whatever. We got it covered. And while we do specialize in the outdoor industry, we do a lot more with upland dogs and fishing. And I mean, we're working kind of hush hush, but there's a story about somebody with a medical issue that we found their story super intriguing. So we're covering that as well, and kind of telling that story piece by piece. And we kind of do it all.
That's awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah, man. Congrats. Keep up the good work.
Well, Brandon, we appreciate you coming on today. Hopefully we see more of your stuff in the future, and maybe come back out and film some stuff for CWA at some point.
Absolutely. I mean, California's the home, man. I can stay away, but I can't stay away that long. I always find myself back there a few times a year.
Good. Well, when you're back here, reach out to us. We'd love to get you on a hunt somewhere.
Awesome. Let's do it.
All right. Sounds good, Brandon. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Brandon.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Save It for the Blind podcast. You can find our podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.